with New York's only local news talk morning radio program. Here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, 8 minutes now after 8 o'clock. Raining in New York City. I think it has slowed the mayor slightly. He will be here momentarily. I see the folks that he comes with are here, so the mayor must be right behind him. We'll get into all sorts of things. I think it was interesting when the governor vetoed the pension bill and said that the unions needed to come up with a Tier 5, that, of course, they reacted in the predictable way. And I think, however, that ultimately the reality of the world around us will probably put it in a perspective where we will see modifications, if nothing else. Mayor Michael Bloomberg has arrived.
I was not late. I was just getting coffee and a quarter of a bagel down the hall.
All right. Well, you're all set? You're all comfortable?
Yeah.
You're comfortable,
yeah.
ready to go?
It's a nice sort of, you know, with the rain, it's one of those mornings where you're sort of a little bit more relaxed. Is that right?
Is that what it is? Good for you.
I forgot to tell you. Well, I didn't have a chance to tell you. I found one of your listeners.
Oh, stop it.
Come on. Jean Sullivan.
Which one was that?
This woman, Jean Sullivan, came up to me. Her son, Thomas Sullivan, is a firefighter with Marine Company, and he won a medal. We had Medal Day, which we do every year for the firefighters and EMS and paramedics who do something extraordinary during the year. Normally, it's on the steps of City Hall, and except if it rains, it's inside Pace's auditorium, and Pace is nice enough to give us the auditorium, and this is the second, third time we've had it indoors. And she came up to me and said she loves you and listens to you all the time.
Well, I thank
you.
So you
should say thank you to Jean Sullivan. But the most important thing is to congratulate her son, Thomas Sullivan, who really did earn a medal.
Now, does he work on one of the fireboats? You said he was a Marine.
They all do different things, and he's in the Marine Company. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Have you ever been aboard the fireboat? It's really cool.
I was here in the late 60s, I must have been part of some organization, and we arranged things to do around the city, and one was a trip on a fireboat.
It's really fascinating work that they do in it.
Yeah, and you see them all the time. They were at the Queensborough Bridge birthday, 100th birthday last Saturday morning.
And of course, when the plane went down in the Hudson, they were there. And
they used to have more fireboats. There were a lot more fires. Today, we're a lot safer and. But the fireboats they don't just put out fires on boats out there where engines obviously can't get. They on things that are near the shore, and they participate in rescues. And
all right, I know that you were very supportive of what the governor did with his veto of the pension extension, and I know that you have had a desire for a Tier 5 to kind of help where we are.
Well, look, number one, I feel very strongly that we have the greatest labor force in the world and a municipal labor force. They could compete with any private sector labor force I've ever seen. There's good and bad, but on balance, they are great. I've always had a strategy of you pay people as much as you can, but they have to, in return, work as hard as they can and be as flexible as they can. And I think that's why this city works, because that is true. We've raised salaries significantly over the last 7 years, and they've also improved the quality of services, and that's great. Crime keeps coming down. Teachers, you know, it's hard to argue they didn't really, and principals do a phenomenal job. But, you know, it's true throughout the city. The one thing that we cannot afford is to keep paying people who we've yet to hire at this rate. We have an obligation. We made a deal. We should live up to that deal with the existing workforce. But for people that we have yet to hire, the world is different. And the marketplace is different. And the pension system is just going to, our pension costs are growing dramatically. It's something we can't afford. And so I think is fair is to have a new tier. Now, we already have tiers 2, 3, and 4. So obviously, when the city and the state got in trouble before, they created new tiers. People say, oh, we shouldn't do this. They say, well, everybody should get paid the same. Well, we don't pay everybody the same. We pay people who
Nobody
have worked
does.
This for a longer period of time. Yeah, in government, though, keep in mind, it's civil service. So, you know, there are people who work together in the same office, on the same fire engine, on the same truck, and they get different salaries based on how long they are here. There's no difference based on when they joined. If we don't do that, if we don't figure out how to reduce our pension costs going forward, we're going to have dramatically fewer employees, which means a lot worse services, and we don't want that.
Do you think this will affect hiring?
Depends on the economy. Today, absolutely not. In good times, when there's the private sector is a better alternative, it does make it tougher. Sure, the marketplace works. Although, keep in mind, some of these jobs are people, if you have a dedication for public service, you don't necessarily, to say they don't do it for money is ridiculous. We all have to work to feed our families, so the money is important. Teacher wants to help the kids, but they still have to pay the bills. Firefighter puts their lives at risk, but they still have to pay the bills. You go down the list. We still are able, in very good economic times, to recruit people. Right now, nobody's leaving. Our plans to downsize the government through attrition are working, but working slower than we had projected because people aren't leaving to, they think they're not going to get a job in the private sector and so be able to have their pension and that, so they stay working.
And that affects you or makes it more difficult because you are paying higher salaried individuals than the replacement.
The people who are going to retire get generally, there's exceptions, but generally they get paid more than those who aren't at the retirement age yet because we have a salary structure that is tied to longevity. If you want to downsize by attrition, you are going to lose the more senior people over time. Now, you don't lose them all, and you hate to lose the expertise, but you also got to give opportunities to other people, and you need to have some of the senior people stick around, but you don't need all of them, and some want to stay, but not all of them want to stay. The changes, however, at the moment, because of the outside world, fewer people are retiring. But we have to do something about our pension costs. And some of the suggestions to change from a defined contribution or defined benefit to a defined contribution plan would be much more controversial.
Describe those briefly, if you could, the differential.
We have a plan where we guarantee your benefits no matter what it costs us. Another kind of plan is we guarantee to put a certain amount of money in, and you get whatever benefits we can afford with that amount of money. One's defined benefits, one's defined contribution. The one we have now is defined benefits. That used to be very common. It is less common today because companies in the private sector can't afford it. In government, it's harder to change the pension system because there's always the politics involved of it.
Could you switch over with a new tier? I mean, theoretically?
Yeah, anything. The state legislature can do anything it wants with pensions. They tend to be somewhat sensitive, is a nice way to phrase it, to support at the ballot box and in the campaign. But I think it would be fine to continue with the kind of plan we have, just that for new hires, not for the existing ones. But for new hires, a less generous plan.
Again, you don't know what the future is going to be, but it seems that times get tighter and tighter, even in the flush times, even in the good times, so that you want to...
That's because the cost of medical care goes up. That's
correct.
One thing.
Right.
And the pension system, because people are living longer.
Right. And the numbers get larger and larger from a...
Yeah, although keep in mind...
The real cash dollars get bigger.
Real cash dollars, but that's its percentage. Proportionally, it grows with the size of the labor force. Our pension systems, up until recently, with the big decline in the value of their assets in the for their investments, had been fully funded. The problem is now we have this double whammy. Not only has the cost of what we have to provide in terms of services go up in case of health care or living longer in the case of the pension system, but the investments that were the monies we had put away all of a sudden is worth, 25%, 30%, something like that less, and we're going to have to make that up. And it is very, very expensive. Now, the good news is we're not in the worst situation. There was an article I read, the New Jersey pension system is in much bigger trouble, state pensions, than New York State and the city as well, partially because we funded ours. We have a problem of the decline in the asset value. they have a double barrel problem. They didn't fund
theirs. They have no assets.
And what they had went down. Yeah. Sure, absolutely. And then you read these stories about the pension systems and the benefits and the salaries for municipal workers outside of New York. There was a police chief I saw on Newsday, I think it was, had a front page story yesterday, the day before. Yeah, some guy's got a 16-officer police department. He makes the same thing as Ray Kelly that has
35,000 bucks, I think, was the number.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, they can do that, but they're going to have to pay for it. And one of these things, they've run to Albany. There's this movement in Albany to get Albany to cap the property taxes.
At 4%, or that was the
suggested
number. Right?
The trouble is, if they continue to give their municipal workers wages, it's going to become an obligation of the state, which means an obligation of the city, since we pay a lot more, a bigger percentage of the state's expenses than we get back. And that's why I'm opposed to it. I also think it's not democratic. If the people of Suffolk County want to pay their police chiefs the same as we pay ours, I think they have a right to do that. They're going to have to pay it. But that's up to them. And some people say, oh, well, you know, not everybody votes. Okay, that's democracy. You don't want to have a say? Don't vote. You do want to have a say? Go on November to the ballot.
All of these things are tied into management and controlling costs. And the people are the government, so the people have to tell the representatives.
The trouble is that sometimes
there's a disconnect,
people, sometimes there's a theory that there's three groups. There's the municipal workforce, generally unionized, not all, but generally. There's the government, generally elected, but not always. And then there's the public. I would argue that the government is the public, but
so do I. I mean, I agree with you, but unfortunately, there's a seeming ever-widening gap.
Everybody wants to have more services and give more things away, but they don't want to pay for them.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. Let me pay for a couple of things. Keep the lights on around here at WOR for a moment. 20 minutes after 8 o'clock, we're coming right back. All right, we continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 24 after 8 o'clock. You will be part of this as well. If you like, we've got a telephone number and access to the mayor for you at 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, get in line now, 800-321-0710. The Atlantic Yards Project, what's up with that?
It looks like it's going to go ahead, which would be
great. With some modifications, though.
Well, big modifications. The Frank Gehry, who is a genius, designed a spectacular stadium, but I think just the Ratner came to the conclusion, Bruce Ratner, the developer, Forest City Ratner, that in this day and age, you just cannot finance something as complex to build as that stadium. It was just, you know, Frank Gehry stuff. There's no such thing as a straight wall
right.
with Frank.
And anybody who's built something knows that as soon as you put a curve in it, it costs you a lot more
and
money.
And Frank is into curves, if nothing else. And, yeah, I think his buildings are great, fantastic even. But this one, Ratner just, you know, they decided to part company because Ratner couldn't afford to build it. The economics didn't work with today's market. So he's got another designer who built a couple, some good stadiums, I'm told, and got a design, and it looks like it'll go ahead. I hope
push the project back.
I don't know. Because I think there's a lot of infrastructure underneath. It'll be a while before you see it. Mm-hmm. You know, seats going in. But it'll be great. We need another venue in the city for people. And, you know, the Atlantic Yards, you have great transportation going out to Long Island and from the city. You have more transportation there than you do probably at, under Madison Square Garden, which is an enormous amount of transportation. But Atlantic Yards has a very similar kind of thing. And if you want to have a circus while somebody else has the Ice Capades, they still have the Ice Capades?
I believe they do, yes.
Then, you know, you'll have another venue. Dolan's might not like competition, but competition's good for everybody.
Speaking of the Dolan's in Madison Square Garden, there was some talk about moving that. Where is that?
They could never get together with the developers, and once again, the market is different. I think Vornado and Related had ideas about doing it. They have some land there. Everybody's tried. It is a very complex, in all fairness to the Dolan's and to Related and Vornado, it's very complex because you have the federal government involved. Remember, you've got Amtrak coming through. You've got the state government. You've got the MTA. You've got the New Jersey government. The port comes into that area. There's some Port Authority stuff, I think. The Dolan sort of gave up and said, this is never going to get done. We're just going to renovate what we have here, which may very well have been the same decision you and I would have come to. I don't know.
While we're talking about construction and buildings and the like, how about the post office? We haven't heard much about that lately.
Well, that's part of the project. The trouble is, you know, it's an enormous entrance to a underground
train station,
and the logistics of converting. You're always going to have the underground train station. People look back and say, oh, we ripped down the old Penn Station. It was a mistake. Yeah, let's assume it was. Taking this building, and it's a phenomenal building, but turning it into a meaningful thing other than you'd walk into a lobby and then have to go through so many curves and twists underground that nobody'd want to use it because it'd take you forever to get to the track. Last time I saw plans, it's been a while since I've looked at it, but there was a thought of just making what goes under the garden right now, opening that up a little bit.
All right. The Tonys are here. I know you wanted to talk about it, this is an appropriate time.
This is an appropriate time because every year the
Sunday,
Tonys,
right?
Sunday, 8 p.m. In Times Square. We have all this new open space in Times Square. There is going to be a Clear Channel Spectacolor screen in Times Square.
Oh, so you can go right to the Broadway open space.
Yeah, absolutely. Seating for a couple of thousand fans. Broadway is certainly a part of New York City's cultural identity, draws people to the city. 250,000 people attended Broadway shows last week, so there really is an interest. And this, as you know, is the 63rd annual Tony Awards. So 8 p.m. on Sunday. You can, I assume, watch it at home, but Times Square would be a great place to watch it. And the weather's supposed to be good.
You've got your Broadway modification, a couple of weeks under your belt now. I heard from a business person up there, I will not say who, but a business that was not happy with it because of reasons that affected his business. I'm curious.
Some people are going to be better.
Right.
Some people,
I'm just curious what.
There's two issues here. Number one, in all fairness, it is summertime and a down economy, so you got to be a little bit careful and say, well, if it works today, will it work tomorrow? I think the first numbers are that traffic on 7th and 6th much better than before. Broadway really didn't have much traffic on it before anyways because it's already been down to two lanes. One of the cross streets, 50th, I think, I'm not sure, I don't remember exactly which one, they had some problems with and they were adjusting timing on signals. It is going to be different. Some businesses will benefit and some businesses won't. I think cab drivers in the end will come to like this because they make money moving, not stuck in traffic. And when they say, well, I can't pick anybody up on Broadway, well, people only have to walk half a block and they're at a cross street or 6th or 7th. So they're going to get the same amount of business, but I think they'll do better if they can keep going. And I was with somebody last week who said he took three cab rides and asked three cab drivers, and they loved it.
You mentioned summertime, and just before we go to the half-hour break, I know in the past years you've expressed some concern about street fairs in New York City and what they bring and what they don't bring.
Well,
to the
originally
city.
They were designed to raise money for charities or the local community, and I think that really doesn't happen. They don't raise very much of anything. People like them. There's a lot of people at street fairs, and you know, if people like them, no reason not to let
sausage
people,
and peppers and onions.
Not good for my waistline, but I love it. And they're fun. You know, a lot of crowds, people like that. They do screw up traffic a lot, and they cost us a lot of money in terms of providing police redirecting traffic as well as security. And that's something that, we're having a tougher and tougher time being able to afford just with smaller budgets. You can't do everything you'd like to do, and we certainly don't want to take our eye off the ball on fighting street crime or protecting us against terrorism just to accommodate a street fair. We've talked about what you can do. One of the things is maybe move some of them to Broadway, which would be a good use of that. Maybe move them to side streets where it has a lot less impact. That might make some sense. But we have to look at that. Parades and street fairs, script traffic, you get a lot of complaints, and a lot of people like them. Good. Now what do you want to do?
Okay. That's why they pay
and
you the big
bucks. I like them, too.
Yeah, exactly. So they are fun. It is a problem, though, to have to balance all of that.
And I want to talk about crime when you come back.
Yeah, you bet. It's on my list, and we will get to it a little 22 minutes before 9 o'clock. Again, don't give John a call. Give the mayor a call, 800-321-0710. Got one line open if you have a question for the mayor. I talked with the police commissioner just the other day. Talked about this crime. crime stats continue to go down?
Well, the FBI puts out the something they call Crime in the United States, their preliminary uniform crime report for 2008.
It's extraordinary.
Well, in 2008, crime here fell, overall crime slightly, violent crime another 4%, outpacing the nation's decline, thank you very much. Of the 10 largest reporting cities, because I think Chicago doesn't report, but the most of the others do. Of the 10 largest reporting cities, New York ranked the safest. Of the 25 largest reporting cities, New York ranked the safest. Of the 261 U.S. cities with populations larger than 100,000, New York's crime rate ranked 246th down the list, which is where you want to be on the bottom of this one. It is between Torrance, California, and McKinney, Texas. So if you want to be safer, don't move to Torrance, but do move to McKinney, Texas. Who would have thought? And our data for this year is super so far. You know, conventional wisdom is when the economy goes down, crime goes up. Except that's not what's happening here. Crime down another 12% citywide so far this year, and that includes a 21% drop in murders and a 17% drop in robberies and 17% decrease in rape. So it turns out that the bad guys don't read the Wall Street Journal and has nothing to do with it. And it's, you know, great policing and cooperation from the DAs and probations, corrections from the public. You know, things are going in the right direction.
The police commissioner's phone was ring off the hook with police commissioners from all over the country saying, how do you do it? Tell me how.
It's easy. One of the things that's funny, everybody says, I'm going to have a Comstat. Comstat is the name of a system that collects data. If you spend your money collecting the data and put it in a big book and don't use it, you're wasting your money. You should not have Comstat unless you're going to take... That's true in everything. Collecting the data isn't the biggest part of it. It is a necessary problem, part of the problem.
Part one.
It is part one. And if you don't do anything else with it, I would argue, don't... You know, who are you kidding? You're kidding yourself. Just go ahead and get the data. We move our police around every day based on where the bad guys are and where the problem places are, and making sure that we satisfy the needs of the public and protect them and that sort of thing. So those numbers are great. The other numbers that are off the charts, as you know, since last week where I talked to you, math scores.
Absolutely. My question about that, and they were very good. One statistic I saw today, and let me finish because I want to ask you this question, that the public school math scores were good. They were 81%, I think, performed at or above level. The charters were at 90%. Do you see a day when charters either equal in number the number of public schools? I mean, will there be a slide to that formula?
I don't think so. I think, keep in mind, number one, charter schools are public schools. Okay, but there's a misconception here.
But
they operate
slightly
under a different set of rules, right, and a different, slightly different funding and that sort of thing. There is enormous demand for charters, and if you believe that people, you don't like charters, help me fix the public schools. Charters give us a target. It's great, and incidentally, not all charter schools are great. There are, and when a charter school isn't great, we help them try to fix it, and if not, we should close it. Same thing with public schools. But competition's a wonderful thing, and I think you take a look at the 80,000 teachers that work in our public schools here, the non-charter schools, they love the competition. They are doing just, when you talk to teachers, they're beaming because people know they're doing a great job. And now you're starting to see results in the eighth grade, which is the middle school is the toughest in education.
No question about it.
Educators say because, you know, the kids, the
hormones are running.
And they're one day they're a child and one day they're an adult and they're never.
And they're all mixed up in the same.
All mixed up, sure. I mean, we all went through this. But now all of a sudden, the most amazing thing is we're starting to do better in the middle schools. And the reason, I think, is the teachers have always been working very hard and they're very competent in the middle schools. But what got to them were kids who never got the right education in the elementary schools. Now, those kids who are entering middle school have been through the end of social promotion and the institution of accountability and the extra teaching that the teachers do in small classes afterwards, all of those things. And so the middle school teachers are getting a cohort of kids to work with that are better prepared for middle school work, and then they have the opportunity to take those things, those kids, and make them even better. So it all sort of feeds on itself. Right now, I think there's about 30 or 40,000 people waiting for charter schools. And charter schools, Harlem, for example, has more charter schools than any place else. And I was in Queens with one of the elected officials who said, our schools are great. We don't need charter schools. You know, if there's demand, we should satisfy the demand. But I think in the end, the real answer is continuing to improve the traditional schools. And at the rate they're going, they're about to give the state a run for its money. Because we're catching up with the state in fourth grade math. We were a couple percentage points, 3.5, I think, away from the state. No big city.
An argument for vouchers? I mean, to expand the competition?
Vouchers are one of those things. It sounds great, but the truth of the matter is I've always thought with vouchers, I figured politically you'd never get it done, but let's assume you could. The problem is that the people who use the vouchers would be people who probably would have paid anyways. People that think if you have vouchers, those who can't pay and wouldn't pay would have another source. Wrong. They'd have the same access as those who do pay. Those who do pay would love to get it for nothing. I don't disagree. I understand that. But also, there aren't enough places to use the vouchers. There aren't anyways near enough
schools.
That's
one of the arguments I've always made.
Yeah. The real answer is you got the traditional public school model. It works if you have accountability and you keep politics out of it, and that's what we've got to do. That's why we've got to renew it. If you go back to when we have the old Board of Ed, which is really the difference between the Board of Ed and what we have today, is that the Board of Ed was a bunch of people appointed, not elected, appointed by the mayor and the borough presidents and whomever, but once they got in there, they did not listen to whoever appointed them. They went ahead and did whatever they wanted, and so they got co-opted by some special interest groups, and nobody focused on the kids. Everybody focused on the special interests that were driving these people. And so when the people say, well, let's have mayoral control with fixed terms, that's the old Board of Ed. Forget about it. You're being duplicitous if you say that's mayoral control, because it's not. Mayoral control is a binary thing, either you control or not. Some people say, I don't like mayoral control. Okay, but keep in mind, take a look at our math scores, take a look at our English scores, take a look at the graduation rates, which are coming out and I think will be very good. Take a look at the crime rate in the schools, which I'm told is coming out and is going to be up, down once again big time, which is great. This is working. And, you know, I don't know how you could go change
it. What happens if you don't get it?
There's an awful lot of kids who, for the rest of their lives, will not be able to participate in the great American dream. They will not have the education they need. They won't be able to hold a job. Some will wind up in lives that spiral down. And we know what happens when kids don't get a good education. We know the old system did not give a good education. We know this one is doing it. You can always say there's some system that could be better, but how anybody could look parents in the eye and say, we had a system that was working, but I got rid of it because I don't like anybody to have that kind of decision-making power. That's what government's all about. You elect somebody to do a job, and if you don't like them, don't elect them. And in fact, if people don't like the progress that we've made in the public school system, they're going to have an opportunity on November 11th to make a change. That's what democracy is.
Before we get to our phones, and by the way, Figs must be really being tough on everybody today. I still have one line open at 800-321-0710. Swine flu update.
Still dangerous. Still not very severe. Fewer people showing up every day at the hospitals. Most of the people that show up are what the epidemiologists call the worried well. I always love that term. Turns out there's nothing wrong, but they were worried about it. The advice from the doctors is the same. Don't go to the hospital unless you're really sick, because that's where sick people are. And you're likely to catch something that you don't have by going. You know, people say, I got to check. I can't live with myself unless I check. I'm sorry. You want to put your kid in danger or yourself in danger, go to the hospital. If you are sick, go, and we don't check your documentation status or anything. If you have certain pre-existing conditions, very young, very old, overweight, diabetes, asthma, a whole bunch of things, and you start to get the sniffles or cough, call your doctor, and your doctor can tell. It's also true. I love it. And you see, the doctor says, I have swine flu. The doctors cannot tell. They can say you have a flu, but nobody knows which version of the flu because it's very complex. Only our Department of Health and Mental Hygiene and the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta and a few other places around the country can really tell the difference. The doctor can assume, but there's at least two kinds of flus going around, and they go around all the time. 7 people have died so far. Very tragic. Prayers are with them. 6 had pre-existing conditions, which would have fit what the doctor said, put you more at risk. And the 7th, they are doing an investigation.
The story there.
But instantly, when we close these schools and come back, the number of cases in schools where kids go to the nurse reporting fever continues to go down.
Your reaction to the story in the paper is about homeless, but welfare people going into the luxury condos.
You know, luxury condos. We're paying the same rate for these we pay for all of them. It tells you about the market. Somebody built a building. They couldn't rent it, so they rented it to us for our standard thing. Actually, it's through an agency.
Just luck of the draw, right?
Luck of the draw, whether you get it. We're not going to let people just sit there. This is a transition thing. We want to move them out. And if they say, oh, I love this here, I don't want to try something else, I'm sorry. That's not the whole intent here. But we have to find places for people, and you have more people to house when the economy goes down. And we were lucky to find this one. It's the luck of the draw. It happens to be beautiful and brand new rather than old and ugly, but... You know, whichever comes up next is what you'll get, and it's not permanent. You're still going to have to take care of yourself long term.
All right, those apartments or those condos or co-ops, are they owned by the city or you're just renting them?
No.
I mean, when the landlord, if the market turns around, the landlord says to the city, go away.
Absolutely. Okay. I don't know what the terms of the lease are, and I think we don't do it directly. We do it through an agency.
Right.
But we're out all the time looking for apartment buildings and apartments that the land owners can't rent elsewhere because we don't pay very much, and we're not paying any more for this than we're paying for the old stuff.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on one final break, and then we'll go to the phones. 800-32 Bloomberg, good morning and happy Friday to you. 7 now before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, we got a few callers right here. Let's jump right into it. We're going to start with Jonah in Manhattan. Jonah, you got the mayor. Go.
Hi, Mayor Bloomberg. I'm a really big fan of yours.
Thank you.
And John, I love your show also.
Thanks, Jonah. What's your question?
I wanted to know if you would ever entertain the idea of getting rid of cars altogether in Manhattan. I mean, I know you've taken a big step already with closing parts of Broadway.
Well, if people, there's enough screaming about Broadway.
Congestion
pricing didn't go so well. You know, if you had perfect mass transit, you could really entertain that. But we're not going to get rid of cars and trucks. What you have to do is to improve mass transit and make it a better alternative for most people. Some people will still drive their cars, and there's some reasons why you really couldn't do without it. Cars, if you think about the percentage of the city that is devoted to cars.
It's enormous.
It's enormous, sure. And most cars tend to have, I don't know, a little over one person on average in them, and it uses a lot of space. But we keep in mind, don't have good enough mass transit to provide a real alternative, and you still would have to have cabs and trucks and that sort of thing. But it's there are people, John, who want to do that.
I think there are a lot of people that want to do that. Jonah, thanks a lot. Let's go to line 5. That's Carl in Brooklyn. Carl, good morning. You've got Mayor Bloomberg's ear.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mayor. I have a suggestion. I don't know if you're willing to entertain it, but it regards bicyclists, and I would wonder if you would have them register with the city and pay a registration fee and also require them to have insurance, maybe through their insurer, because I witnessed a bicyclist hit a pedestrian.
Well, bicycles do hit pedestrians all the time. You're right. And one of the things is, you know, they ride on the sidewalks, which is against the law. And, the people who are my age and older are the ones that generally get hit just because you're less, you hear a little bit react a little bit slower and that sort of thing. My recollection is when I was younger in Massachusetts, you did have to register bicycles. I just remember these tiny, thin license plates.
Remember the tags, the little tags
you
used to get?
Yeah, they did have that. I guess that's gone away. I think in a practical sense, Carl, you'd never get it done. What we have to do is try to enforce the laws about bicycles, and that is hard. It's one of these things that is just... They'd like to
it's
do.
A complicated city.
It's a complicated
it's
city.
It's a complicated
city. You're clearly right that some people get hurt and hurt badly, and bicyclists have a responsibility as well.
All right, let's go to Frank in Whitestone, New York. Frank, you're with Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Hi.
Good morning, Your Honor. Your Honor, I've been doing pension welfare audits for the past 25 years for perhaps 75% of the locals and unions located here in New York City. I love my job. However, there's been something that's become pandemic. When I find something that is non-union and I report this to my CPA who's hired me, they're not interested in me devoting all the time to get all the facts. All they want to do is just do a cursory audit.
What's the question, Frank?
My question is, this proliferation of non-union shops is continuing because those who hire auditors like me don't want me to complete my job.
These are non-union workers in the private sector or the public sector?
Frank?
These are contractors, building contractors, hospitals, whatever industry comes under the union label. When I find something, they're only interested in collecting their fee and not have me devote all my time, which is necessary to uncover sophisticated fraud.
Frank, you know, I just don't know the issues in of a particular case. We got to make sure that everybody is honest and everybody follows the law, and anybody that sees something and is a whistleblower doesn't lose their job because of it. But unless you know the particular situation, it's really hard to understand. A certain percentage of the private sector workforce here is unionized, tends to be small compared to the non-union. On the government side, it's the reverse. There's some non-union people who work for the city and state who are not, but they tend to be a small percentage of the overall workforce for the city and the state.
So, I don't think it needs to be mandated one way or the other, do you?
We would never, I've never said, we don't give out any business, for example, saying it has to go to a union shop. We can say it has to pay prevailing wage, which the unions generally are happy about that, because then if the wages are roughly the same, union, non-union, they think they can unionize easier. But we're not going to tell anybody to join a union, and we're not going to tell anybody they can't join a union.
All right, let's go to number six here, and that would be Fred in Connecticut. Fred, what's your question?
Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
A couple of weeks ago, you were on John's show, and you had mentioned that there wasn't that much of a problem, you didn't think, with the illegal aliens taking the jobs of people who didn't want to do, jobs.
Fred, I hate to rush you, but I need the question.
In a city where your black unemployment level is so high, how could you possibly condone a condition like that?
Well, it is true that certain ethnic groups have a higher unemployment rate than the others. I think the numbers I saw, the differences can be from 6% in one to 12% in the other, or 8% to 15%, numbers like that. It's not all transferable. Undocumented here don't take generally jobs that others would do. They tend to be young people who come here, send money home. They don't bring their kids, so they don't go to school. They're young, so they don't use the hospitals. Generally, most of us use most of our costs, medical costs, in the end of our life. They pay taxes generally because their employer withholds and they don't get a refund. They stay away from the crime because they're worried about the INS. But it's just not true. On balance, the people from overseas that come here create more jobs than they take by a lot, and we really desperately need them in tough times, even more than in good times.
All right, Mr. Mayor, your job here is complete for this week. Thank you very much. Always appreciate it. And
looking
enjoy
forward
seeing
to
you.
Next weekend, John.
You bet.
Rain today, but great weekend coming up.
Enjoy yourself. We'll talk to you next week, and have a good week.